Hello, Lorena Allen with you for Hindsight here on RN. Today, memory, illusion, and the power of storytelling. Later on, we explore why we love to tell stories and what happens when a tale moves from the spoken to the written word. But first, a true story, which sounds like fiction. Once upon a time, there was a Bavarian princess called Alexandra who had a strange story about a glass piano. It's part history lesson, part speculative tale, part psychological study. The Glass Piano is written and presented by British poet Deborah Levy, and the princess is conjured up by the great Emily Watson.
When I came across the strange, true story of Princess Alexandra Amalia of Bavaria, born in 1826, I was intrigued by her dilemma. The princess, at the age of 23, was observed walking sideways with great difficulty down the corridors of the royal palace. When questioned by her worried royal parents, who knew they'd inbred rather dangerously, the princess confesses that when she was a child, she had swallowed a grand piano made from glass. Consequently, because of her imagined shape, she is fearful that if she bumps into anything, the glass piano inside her might shatter.
I do not want to be observed by the servants.
I'm trying to imagine what it must be like to be Princess Alexandra. If I can just accept her language for a moment, it would be very difficult to get around with a grand glass piano inside her. Probably means that she can take no risks whatsoever in the world, because if she does bump into anything, she will break and she will become a terrifying tangle of flesh and glass. I'm totally on side with the princess. I'm a writer interested in what people can't put into words and what they can't say. If we were all hugely articulate and could own up to our most awkward thoughts, there'd be nothing to write about.
Don't stand so close to me. Take 3 steps to your right.
I can see her now. There she is, slowly, very delicately, making her way towards the dining room in the palace. She's wearing a white dress. Her hair is pinned up. Certain colours and smells distress her. Perhaps she's giving orders to her obedient and bewildered royal servants.
I want the chairs on either side of me at the table to be vacant, and I do not want to sit on the chair that is carved and gilded. My preference is to lightly balance on the red silk chair with 2 cushions. Just 1 spoonful of soup, please. After which I request you open the 2 adjoining doors, so I will not be crushed between them.
If Alexandra Amalia has swallowed something bigger than herself, what's going on?
Hi, it's Deborah.
Hi, come up to the table.
I've come to speak to the psychoanalyst, Susie Orbach. Susie, a hyperliteral response would be for the royal parents to say, Alexandra, what's got into you? And she might reply, a grand glass piano, that's what. And her parents might say, "We're going to take that piano out of you. You're going to have an operation. Never swallow a grand glass piano again."
Well, I think you're describing a thoughtful parent, because it's acknowledging something that the person has invented without saying it's mad. And I think if you can say it's not mad, then you can look at what was that piano doing in there and what's its function. So I suppose I'd be the next step along, and I'd be wanting to take as real for the princess her piano. And I'd want to know all about that piano. I don't think I would be interpreting per se in the beginning, because I would want to know the experience of carrying that piano around inside of you.
So if we accept her language, carrying a grand glass piano inside her is going to be pretty big. Do you think it's important that it's a piano, or do you think any object would do?
I'm sure it is really important that it's a piano, because what's piano mean? It means softly, doesn't it, in musical terms? So I would assume there's something that can't be heard and that's so fragile because it's glass. But if it could be played, it has a lot of notes on it.
There she is. She's moving across the marble corridors, gazing at the glass skylight above the staircase. She's probably on her way to the bedroom.
I request my bed be placed in the middle of the room instead of against the walls.
She's afraid of playing her glass piano because she thinks that the moment she attempts to express herself, she's going to shatter. And I'm very familiar with that feeling. When I start to write, you know, you do have to take a deep breath and just go for it.
Yeah, I suppose what I would think, it's not that I would deny that at all, but what you're shattering or breaking up is known ways of being in the attempt to give voice to something else. So I think, maybe this is the way I work as a therapist, is that I'm thinking, not why can't she play her piano, but if she could, what would she play? In other words, I'd be wanting to go to the place that in her imagination can't be thought, which is the possibility of having that piano and having a voice, and its fragility being about tenderness towards a part of herself that's undeveloped, rather than a piece of her breaking.
Her father was Ludwig I of Bavaria. He was distinguished by his shabby clothes and a large bruise on his forehead, always removed in paintings. Apparently, he enjoyed many extramarital affairs. Perhaps it was the bruise that drew women to him. He was also a notoriously bad poet who wrote masses of rhyming couplets. The poems might have been harder for his wife to suffer than his affairs. Strangely enough, his clever but troubled daughter was also a writer, possibly more skilled than her father, and she wasn't alone in thinking that part of her might be made from glass.
My name is Erin Sullivan. My research is looking specifically at how people understood what sadness was.
Do you think there's a connection between melancholy and the delusion of being made from glass?
There's certainly a history of a connection between the two. One thing that doctors note throughout time into the 16th and 17th century is how diverse the symptoms of melancholy are. And one of the most interesting, really, is fears about the body being overly fragile or being vulnerable in some way. And so glass delusions is one of the fears that evolves out of this. So you have certain stories about men thinking that their entire body is made of glass, and as a result, removing themselves from society because they're afraid that if they have too much contact with people, they will shatter. There's also stories of people being worried that particular body parts are made of glass, like arms or legs, or even their hindquarters. This actually results in a lot of delight, really, in the medical stories, because it's kind of a sharing of these strange things that happen to people.
There is a wonderful story by Cervantes called The Glass Graduate. This tells of a man who believed his entire body was made from glass. He wears loose clothing, sleeps in straw, and he's so scared of people, he actually walks in the middle of the road to avoid injury from falling roof tiles. Another intriguing glass delusion is of a man who believed he had glass buttocks and so refuses to sit down. Reports of glass bones, arms and legs appear later in early modern Europe, but early accounts were particularly rich in allusions to men who thought they had glass hearts, chests, fragile heads, and the French king Charles VI even had iron ribs made under his clothes to protect himself from breaking, unsure about the fragility of his organs. Most of the case histories of the delusion of body parts being made from glass seem to be male.
To be honest, they are predominantly male, and in fact, all the ones I can think of are men, which is interesting because melancholy throughout the early modern period is associated with a kind of masculine nobility. This fascination really with melancholy exists in many centuries, just in different forms. So in the 18th century, with the dawn of Romanticism, you have a great interest in melancholia as a kind of beauty, really, that in great beauty, there's also great sadness. You can't have the two separated if you want to create beautiful works of art. So a real aspiration to bring in both the exciting, the lovely, the pleasurable, but also the dangerous, the sad, the dark element, and you get the idea of the sublime. And so I think that interest in considering how different emotional states affect the way that we interact in the world, and certainly how we think about art, persists in all different periods and in the 19th century as well.
Well, Aristotle thought that most poets and statesmen and philosophers were prone to melancholia with or without glass buttocks, so the princess might aspire to be a melancholic. She's definitely sad about something. All the same, she doesn't think her arms made from glass. She has chosen a glass piano. Perhaps she's a sort of early cyborg, a collision of flesh and technology. Woman and piano have merged. The piano is, after all, an instrument of communication. The glass piano and the princess are communicating secretly. The German sculptor Joseph Beuys wrapped a grand piano in felt, as if trapping the sound inside it, or silencing something. The felt was a kind of protective skin. Perhaps if the princess had somehow managed to conceptually cover her glass piano in felt, she might not have feared it shattering so much.
The carpet's red if anything happens.
The horrible thing is that her piano is wrapped in her own flesh and blood. How would it look on an X-ray?
On the X-ray, it will be what we would call a radio-opaque object.
Dr. Fiona Leckie is consultant in emergency medicine and director of the Trauma Audit and Research Network.
On an X-ray, the bones are the most visible structure in the human body. All the other tissues, lungs, soft tissues around, the X-rays tend to go through that, which is why you see mainly bones on the X-ray. And a solid object that's radio opaque like glass will also, in a way, look like a piece of bone that's broken off. It will be the same density and this have the same photographic quality as that. So it will be a dense, dark object within the tissues is what we would see.
Do you think the piano is useful to her in some way?
Well, I suppose how we analysts like to look at it is that symptoms, and this is a symptom, are of use or can be made of use. So a person creates a symptom for various purposes, and they're very creative acts, symptom creation. So I think it must be of use to her. And I don't know enough to know what she's trying to negotiate and what the conflicts are. But I would assume it's something to do with taking up space and not really knowing how much she can take up, being noticed while she's meant to have something quite invisible inside of her, being awkward where I imagine she's meant to be elegant, being hypervisible where she's meant to be invisible as a person, but visible simply as a princess. So I would assume it has all those kinds of contradictory aspects to it.
I will never, ever go horse riding again, ever.
I'm trying to imagine how she might have walked with a hole piano squeezed inside her belly.
I refuse to wear a tight-waisted jacket.
She would have worn satin slippers tied round the ankles with silk ribbons, and she'd be very careful to calculate positions that must be accurate to a matter of centimetres. So as she makes her way past the zinc lions and the velvet ottoman in the corridor, she's probably trying not to trip over her layers of starched petticoats.
Certainly she would not have walked like a princess, because in order to bear a piano inside of her, she would have had to have her legs quite far apart.
True.
And okay, we want to think Freud because it's that moment in history where Freud discovers that we're all sexual beings. So you could say that her legs are far apart for that reason. But you also could say, more, I think, culturally, that she's not taking up the normal space of a woman. She doesn't look like a princess on her little satin slippers is meant to look, because she's having to negotiate around these corridors with this great big piano inside of her.
I think she'll probably hobble with difficulty. It depends on the size of the piano and whether she's swallowed it whole or in pieces.
Stephen Pollock Hill is managing director of Nazing Glassworks.
But of course they had these big crinoline dresses, didn't they, and supports. And so I think whether she actually imagined that she had this piano right sort of in the middle of her walking along, but it makes you wonder, you know, whether with the keys and everything, as she walked along, she imagined it was tinkling and playing a tune, you know. It's a strange obsession that she'd have.
It must be such an effort for her to move at all. It's as if time has slowed up around her. She must be very frightened.
Absolutely. I mean, if she's convinced that she has a glass grand piano in her stomach, then she wants to avoid any impact that could shatter it and cause it to perforate her internal organs. So if she walks around the palace carefully, and I think it says somewhere she walks sideways, then she's far more likely to be able to avoid anybody rushing who might bump into her or bumping into any strange objects And if she walks sideways, those impacts are going to happen to her pelvis and not front onto her stomach. So yes, in that slightly bizarre scenario, walking around carefully and walking sideways are going to reduce the chances of any unforeseen impact causing shattering and damage to the internal organs, which ultimately could result in death.
How would doctors treat patients with delusions of being made from glass?
One thing I noticed in a lot of the glass delusions is that they don't often include discussion of cures. You do have one story of a man, I believe he was a lord, who began to fear that his rear end was made out of glass. And there is a discussion of the doctor's cunning cure, which is that this man was very precious about his glass parts, and he would kind of walk around staying away from other people. And to some extent, he would also try to cover it with a pillow to keep himself protected from any kind of hard objects that might shatter his glass bottom. And the doctor that finally deals with him basically cures him by beating him in the backside. Because the man feels pain as he's beating him, and he says, well, first of all, you wouldn't feel pain if your backside was made out of glass, and second of all, it would have broken well before now. So in that sense, he kind of tricks him out of his delusion. And that's really characteristic of the medical treatments for these kinds of delusions, is doctors believe that melancholics couldn't really be reasoned with because they were so involved in their own fantasies. There was no point in trying to speak rationally to them. So the best way to approach their problems was to enter into the fantasy with them, but then to trick them out of it, really.
Aha! Maybe I might have cured her. What if I was to give her a push? I suppose I'd have to wait round the corner. And just as she finally gets near her bedchamber and turns her back, I'm going to give her a shove.
What are you doing? Oh, how dare you? How dare you? I was almost there. I was almost there. What a mad thing to do. Only somebody crazy would do a thing like that. How dare you?
She's stumbling about and she's really angry. She's so furious. She's screaming so loudly she might break herself.
Glass can break in many different ways. For instance, we were asked by the Home Office to develop a special glass window for prisons that was bomb-proof. And the gentleman pressed a button, and on the horizon there was this big explosion from 100 kilos of Semtex. We worked out by having two pieces of glass that were actually held together with a special kind of silica gel, they would actually give, because the main thing that happens in explosion is the shock waves that cause most of the damage and breaks the glass.
I was wondering what her life might be like without the piano.
Well, I suppose the question is, there's many different ways not to have the piano. If you can incorporate what the piano is, then her life might be very, very rich, or tentative, or express all the fears she has directly instead of indirectly, and express her fragility. And I think once you've expressed, and if you, to use the modern vernacular, owned your fragility in your vulnerability, then actually you have enormous strength, don't you? So that would be one way of her having the piano. Another way would be if the piano is extracted, and that, I think, would be a terrible loss. She'd probably need another symptom.
Well, it is rumoured that she also thought she had a sofa in her head, so it might take a whole removal van to get all those things out of her. I wonder what would happen if she took her symptom to A&E and said, I have to get this thing out of me.
Well, we would perform our standard initial assessment for every patient which walks in, which is essentially eyeballing them and doing what we call the ABC assessment, airway, breathing, circulation, so that if they actually walked in and told us that, that's a sign that their airway is clear, they're able to speak. So then we would take a more detailed assessment of exactly what had happened. Had they swallowed it? Where did they think they had this glass grand piano? And checking their pulse and blood pressure for any signs of internal hemorrhage. And then once the patient was stable, we would start to do some x-rays to find out exactly where the object was. So I guess the two assessments is where is the object and how much damage has it done to the patient so far. And whether we reach for surgery or not really depends on the patient's condition. We would be very concerned that somebody who presented with doing something like that was suffering some kind of major psychosis. In the end, it's called somatization. We do sometimes label them as having deep psychological distress, but it manifesting itself as a physical disorder. Once we were happy that the patient was physically stable, we would be contacting our psychiatrists very early on and asking them to come and do a detailed assessment of the mental state.
Amy loves her piano. I think it's an extraordinary thing to create, and I want her to play it without shattering. What would it take?
Well, of course, if she were a patient, a modern-day patient, with a piano, a glass piano inside of her, we would hope that she could find within her to accept the parts of her that are vested in the piano, and that she could begin to recognise those notes and to play with them and to play the piano, so that it wouldn't be so much shattering, although there would be a loss in giving up the piano, but it would be an incorporation into herself of the bits that she had put on the piano.
The princess wrote short stories, plays, poetry, none of which I've been able to find. She never married, and she spent much of her life in a convent in Munich, where she became an abbess. In 1850, she was treated in a mental institute on the edge of the Black Forest, and she died aged 49. All the same, I'd like to think that she might at least have come to like the idea of playing her piano. Because, as Proust put it, in Remembrance of Things Past, ideas come to us as the successors to griefs.
And griefs, at the moment when they change into ideas, lose some of their power to injure the heart.
If the princess and I were to meet for a drink, we'd probably eye each other rather nervously. And what might she choose? I reckon it would be creme de menthe. It's glassy and green after all.
Delicious.
Cheers.
Prost.
The Glass Piano was presented by writer and poet Deborah Levy and produced for BBC Radio 3 by Kate Bland from Just Radio. Emily Watson was Princess Alexandra, and sound production was by Chris O'Shaughnessy.